Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go by SEC Mike, go on the Twitters. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, how's it going, my friend?
Mike, it's going well. Good to see you. Hope you had a great weekend and looking forward to talking some college football. I guess to start the show by saying thank you for making me take a trip down memory lane tonight.
Yeah, so we were discussing what we should talk about on this episode. And Stephen, as always, had some great ideas. But basically everything that he has suggested, we could table. You know, we could do it tonight. We could do it a week from now. We could do it a month from now. And it'll still be a great conversation to have. And I just felt like this time of year, what better time to kind of debate some of the best teams in recent college football history. So Stephen and I we're gonna run down every national champion that's come out of the SEC in the BCS and the playoff era. And then at the end, we're kind of going to name the best of the best in our mind. So, and we're including Texas when they won it and Oklahoma when they won it, 2000 for Oklahoma, 2005. Texas, because they're SEC now, Stephen. Vince Young may not be an SEC legend, really, but he is on this show. You know what?
Yeah, absolutely, he is. I mean, Chase Daniel at Missouri, Josh Heupel at Oklahoma, Sam Bradford at Oklahoma, Mike, all these guys are SEC legends. I mean, in the college football world where the conferences have been scrambled year over year, it's okay to claim these now, right? I mean, everything's a lot different than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, and man, I mean, not that there's nothing we didn't know, Stephen, but a lot of Alabama on this list. So we're going to be talking quite a bit of Alabama, thanks to old Nick Saban. But before we get into that, so that's mainly what we're going to be talking about. But Stephen and I, we were conversating just a moment ago. Interesting news from the television side as the Texas A&M and the Egg Bowl late last week announced they're moving those games to Friday, and fingers crossed if we get Georgia Tech to move to Friday as well, we could have a triple header of SEC action the day before Rivalry Saturday kicks off. I mean, I can't think of anything better. Can you, Stephen?
Oh, Mike, this is like college football heaven after Thanksgiving, right? You got your leftovers on after Thanksgiving, the day after. You're watching college football all day. There's a triple header of SEC action. And, you know, not only like huge rivalry games, but Texas A&M could mean a lot for positioning. You've got Georgia Tech, you know, it's on Friday at some point, a game that was great last year. So sign me up, because sometimes the Friday slate on Black Friday has been a little light. That's not the case. We got some heavyweights coming this year with the SEC. So I love it. Sign me up.
Yeah. And again, in case you missed it, we covered it about a couple weeks ago, whenever they officially announced it. We've done away with the Kirby Smart timeout every 2-point conversion, because to make a 5-hour game, 5.5 because of timeouts, they've done away with that. That's illegal now.
I think that's a smart move because, yeah, it's like basketball watching it. You know, you get the end of the game and the last like minute takes like 20 minutes, it feels like, because of all the timeouts and the free throws. So that was a good decision. You know, occasionally, Mike, the NCAA and the rulemakers, they make good decisions. That was one of them. You don't need to have a timeout every overtime period.
Mm-hmm. And then the only other thing we thought was pretty interesting. So this has been long rumored for probably about 2 months. I think it goes back that far. But Texas, Ohio State, week one, that is going to be big. Well, I don't even think they've said the big noon kickoff yet, but they're saying that Fox has got the coverage. So it all but assures that Texas at Ohio State first game is going to kick off at 11 a.m. Central, noon Eastern time. Thoughts on that, Stephen? And is there any advantage to Texas having to not go under the lights up here? Tennessee fans will tell you, playing it under the lights of Columbus, that ain't easy.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Mike. I think it's a huge advantage for Texas. You know, on one side of things, I enjoy having a schedule that is like spread out, because I like having marquee games in each window. And I think it's good to sort of mix up the schedule so that way one team isn't playing all night games and one team is playing all day games. I would love to see more balance to our schedules each Saturday and for each team. But I think if you're Texas, you're catching a huge break here. Like, not playing Ohio State at night, where they've had all day for the crowd to get revved up for this game, is huge. This could be preseason number one versus number two, probably by the AP poll. That's what it'll be. So avoiding that is significant. Now, I think all indications are, because Fox is getting this, it's going to be the big noon kickoff. So advantage Texas, not getting Ohio State at night. Also, Ohio State with a lot of new faces. So this is kind of the right time to catch Ohio State if you're Texas in Columbus.
Mm. So, and sorry, geez, Luis, who says PTSD too soon, Mike. That damn Tennessee trip up to Columbus was a short one. You know what?
Yeah, man, that, I think Will Howard is still dropping touchdowns to Jeremiah Smith somewhere.
Well, hey, you know who also is dropping touchdowns, Steven? That's cousin JR. He just gifted another membership, this time to Ben Kerr. Ben, welcome to the family, courtesy of the legend JR, who's got his own sound effect.
Legend, cousin JR has done it again.
Thank you, cousin JR.
The memberships in this podcast are brought to you in part by cousin JR.
All right, so that's it, right, Steven? Let's dive into the best of the best national championships from the SEC. And again, we're including Texas and Oklahoma into this thing. And we're just going as far back as the BCS era because, I mean, again, there's some great teams before that. But I think, fair or not, Stephen, I mean, that's going back any further. It's hard to get into deep detail on teams early 90s and 80s and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think the BCS era was kind of the starting point of like having like one champion officially, because you had like in the past it was the AP, the coaches, you could have multiple champions also depending on some of the other ones. Like the BCS was sort of the first time to pit one versus two, because in the Bowl Coalition and some of these other ones systems from the 90s, one could be playing five in a bowl game, two could be playing seven or for the final ranking. So yeah, the BCS was kind of the starting point at one versus two. It's kind of a good line of markation for defining a champion.
Yeah, and then you know, this is completely off topic. Apologies if you have no idea how to answer this, Stephen. But have you ever wondered why they don't? And I would imagine the schools are very much against it. It's probably the only reason they don't. But do you have any insight into why? Because they used to give out the national championship, to my understanding, before even the bowls were played. So we have a couple national champions that lost the bowl game. Is there any reason why they haven't like gone back and said, you know what, that was foolishness? With, you know, we're supposed to award this after the bowl games, and maybe they, I mean, Alabama would lose about half their trophies if we did that.
It's a good question. You know, it's also, I guess this also brings up another point, kind of like off topic, is like when you look at player stats, you know, some years they decide to start including bowl stats and other years they don't. So it's very strange to see Heisman winner, you know, he played X amount of games in the regular season, but it did not include his bowl stats. So I think, Mike, the honest answer is that's a great question that I really don't have a great answer for you, other than they were just rewarding the champ off the regular season. And to go back like 30, 40, 50 years, you know, college football has just kind of evolved from more regional to more national. It was more at that time about the regular season. The bowl game was the reward. You won the SEC, you got to go to this bowl game. You won the Big Ten, you got to go to a Rose Bowl. So it's almost like, I hate to say, that's just kind of the way it was because the way it was structured, but I think that's probably what it is.
Yeah, and I'm poking fun at Alabama, but I think one of Tennessee's championships was the same, where they were undefeated, lost. I think they lost decidedly in the bowl game. They were still claimed national champions. I think that was the year they went an entire year, I think, without being scored on or not allowing a touchdown, some insane stat like that. But they lost the bowl game. But thankfully, we didn't count that back in. You know what?
I don't know about you, Mike, but one of my favorite things to do every offseason is to like look at some of the schools that teams have played that don't have like college football now. It's like, you know, so-and-so like
Swanee.
Right. Like, you know, so-and-so's rescue squad or what. And also to look back at some of the places that are awarded national championship trophies. I think, you know, Grantland Rice did it up until like 2013, but also the Chicago Tribune did. And so you could just look back at some of these, like the computer rankings, some of the older rankings. Like college football has gone from a lot of places awarding national champions, which is why you got different ones, to just having simply the college football playoff. And that makes it nice and tidy for everyone.
All right, Steven. So let's get into it. Starting first BCS era national champ. This one's for Shane out there. Cousin Shane. 1998 Tennessee Vols went 13-0. Won the conference, of course, averaged 34 points per game, gave up just over 14 points per game, beat Florida State 23-16 in the national championship, Fiesta Bowl. They had two All-Americans, Al Wilson and Raynock Thompson, both at linebacker. And, of course, this is the team that this is the year after Peyton Manning. So Peyton Manning, the number one overall pick. They also lost Leonard Little and Marcus Nash, and I believe they were preseason 14. So, and Tennessee had six players selected in the 99 NFL draft. I know this was a while ago, Stephen, but what stands out to you most about the 1998 Tennessee team?
Mike, I hate to give you kind of a boring answer to start this, but it's almost kind of what we talked about at the beginning. It was the start of a new era for college football. And so seeing how that whole season played out, trying to figure out the BCS formula, who was going to get to number one, was just a fascinating in-season experiment to see how it went. But I think in the big picture for me, the biggest thing that stood out for Tennessee was it was the championship that was supposed to happen before. It was supposed to happen with Peyton. It happened after with T. Martin. And I think about the South Carolina game where T. Martin completed with 23 passes in a row. You also started the season with a bang with the Syracuse game and a last-minute victory there for Tennessee. So many memories in season, but just the change of the sport to the BCS and then T. Martin guiding Tennessee to a title when Peyton Manning was supposed to be the one to do it was always fascinating to me.
Yeah, and I really remember the Florida game. That was always the one, well, still to this day, that trips up Tennessee. But it's like when you beat Florida, maybe you could do something magical. That was a wild, wild game in overtime. I believe the Gators missed PAT, if I remember correctly, to go into overtime. And, of course, Tennessee won it there. And then, one of the most classic moments in all time of SEC was at Arkansas, November 14th, with the Clint Sterner. They had the ball. They were running out the clock. And one of his offensive linemen tripped him up, and he dropped the football. Tennessee recovered it and then just rammed it down their throat for a touchdown with mostly, I think, maybe all running plays to essentially steal a win over top 10 Arkansas. This just felt like the team of destiny. Like Steven said, the Syracuse game was a very close one. I believe the Syracuse quarterback was Donovan McNabb. They were a big-time preseason opponent. I think even Mississippi State in the SEC championship had the lead. So it was just one hurdle after another for Tennessee. And again, is this the best team of all time? Certainly not, but they got better and better. And the belief, I mean, I don't think the belief was there at the preseason, but by the end of the year, it was like a team that would not be denied.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, if you think about how the expectations were for Tennessee coming into that year, you lose Peyton Manning, you have a first-time starter in T. Martin. Surely no way they're going to win the national title, right? Well, they still had a lot of good pieces come back. But then, you know, as the weeks clicked off, I remember thinking, man, they knocked off Syracuse close. They beat Florida, you know, in overtime. And then the Arkansas game, it just sort of everything just aligned for Tennessee to win that year. And of course, getting Florida State with Marcus Altson as the quarterback and not Chris Winkie was a big, you know, kind of break too. It also underscores, and it's not like a bad thing, college football. It's like you have to have good fortune to win. I mean, it's hard to win 13 games, 14, 15, 16. So, I mean, Tennessee was, started off preseason top 15, 10, got the breaks they needed, got better during the season, and capped it off with a pretty memorable victory over Florida State out in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Hey, speaking of Florida State, they lost to this next team, Steven, 2000, Oklahoma. Again, we're counting Oklahoma and Texas because they're SEC now. We love them. We may have hated them back in, Steven, but we love them now. 13-0, Big 12 champs, national champs, of course. They averaged 36 points per game, and they gave up 14.7. So that's pretty dominant to average 36 points and only give up less than 15. They won the Orange Bowl over the defending national champion Florida State in the Orange Bowl, 13-2. I remember how ugly that damn game was. Yeah. Bob Stoops' second season. Josh Heupel was All-American at quarterback. Rocky Kalmus, linebacker, All-American. Safety JT Thatcher was All-American. How about this, Stephen? This Oklahoma was preseason number 19. And I believe I read that this was the first time in 5 years that Oklahoma had been even rated in the preseason poll. And I couldn't believe this. I had to double check it. But of course, you know, the conference has changed and all that. This was Oklahoma's first Big 12 championship. So, and they had two draft picks off this team, linebacker Torrence Marshall and quarterback Josh Heupel. Oklahoma, man, they really put a hurting on Texas, 63-14. I think that's where the nation really took notice. How about that run right in the middle, Stephen? Beating number 11 Texas, beating number 2 Kansas State, beating number 1 Nebraska, and, you know, arguably their toughest game was at Texas A&M. So there was a hell of a lot of good games here and good opponents that Oklahoma beat. And this is another team similar to Tennessee that no one predicted was going to be a national champion in the preseason.
Absolutely. I think the thing that always stood out to me about this Oklahoma team was they, you know, Bob Stoops came in and they were so much better his first season. And then the second year, you thought they would take a jump, and they did. But like you said, they were preseason 19. But I think there was really, they were kind of underrated in that first month of the season. But then once you got to that stretch where they put a hurting on Texas, and then you go on the road and beat a very good Kansas State team by Nebraska, and then you beat Nebraska after that, that three-game stretch, I think, vaulted Oklahoma to one, but also kind of got the belief going that, hey, this isn't just a team that's just a lot better under Bob Stoops. They are a contender to win the national championship. And I will always, one of my favorite players to watch off of this team was, first of all, the linebackers, Kalmus and Torrence Marshall, were dudes. I mean, those guys could inflict some punishment on the offense. But Quentin Griffin, the running back, was so fun to watch. He was like 5'6", 5'7". He was in the backfield with Heupel. It was almost like two guys who were probably not highly recruited. You know, Heupel certainly wasn't. Griffin wasn't. And for them to sort of lead the way in a turnaround to go with this great defense at Oklahoma, the way that that program had been down with under John Blake and even before that, to have this turnaround in a short amount of time was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, Liquid said, man, Nebraska was good that year. That's just weird to think. Like, Nebraska was good at football, but yeah, they were 10-2 that year, only lost to Oklahoma and Kansas State. Again, Kansas State was really good during that time as well, but feels like ancient history on Nebraska. They were competitive in a meaningful way. You know what?
It's like the old Big 12 with the North and South divisions had some really fun battles there with K-State, Nebraska, and Oklahoma. Oklahoma, Nebraska, man. I loved watching that rivalry in the 90s. And I kind of, I guess, I don't know, maybe in some weird way, maybe Nebraska could join the SEC so we could get it back or we get a non-conference in there. But it's just a crazy 2-year turnaround for Bob Stoops, and of course set the foundation for a lot more success going forward there at Oklahoma.
And shout out Cousin John, who says Oklahoma's lucky they missed Mizzou that year. That's funny.
The mighty 3-8 was right there.
All right, and then how about the next one, Stephen? Was it's hopefully we don't have another gap like this in the SEC, but LSU. 2003 won the national championship, but split it with Southern Cal. So this, I mean, still a national champion, but not an outright. It's a split. 13-1. They went 7-1 in the conference. Only loss was to Florida. Florida was unranked. Whoops. But LSU was number 6 going into that game. They averaged just under 34 points per game, and they only allowed 11 points per game. They beat Oklahoma 21-14. In the BCS championship game there. But what it was somewhat controversial because Southern Cal was number one in the AP and the coaches poll, but the BCS rated Southern Cal number three. Meanwhile, of course, the BCS rated LSU and Oklahoma one and two. And shout out, Steven. I know it says it on the screen, but do you know who the offensive and defensive coordinators were for these teams off the top of your head?
I'm pretty sure the offensive coordinator was Jimbo, right?
Yep, you nailed it.
Yeah, I think, and then Muschamp on DC?
Yeah, you nailed it. Anyway. So just some SEC names to know, of course, there. But, man, this team was loaded. Seven draft picks. Marcus Spears, Andrew Whitworth, Michael Clayton, Matt Mock was a quarterback. LaRon Landry, that's a name I haven't heard in a while. He was awesome. Corey Webster, absolutely, absolutely loaded. And this was Nick Saban's first of many national championships.
Yeah, back when Jimbo Fisher and Will Muschamp made everybody's rising star list, right? I think the story for me in this LSU team is it's like Nick Saban arriving, helping LSU reach its potential. So much potential for this program, and then finally getting to the top of the mountain in the sort of the modern era of college football. And, you know, they sort of built through those first 3 years to get to this fourth season. Beat Georgia twice. Like you mentioned, the only loss was to Florida. But just the balance that this team has, I think Matt Mock, I think and LSU fans can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it wasn't quite Colt McCoy, Jordan Shipley, but it felt like every time Matt Mock was mentioned, there was the dentist school thing that he was going to do. So that was mentioned frequently during the season. I seem to remember that they also had Kyle Williams, who's also their defensive line coach at LSU now. So he was a stud on that 2003 team.
Yeah, no, good pull by you, Steven. All right, how about Texas in 2005? It's going to be hard to keep Texas out of the top five, maybe even the best, Steven. 13-0. Won the Big 12, of course. And how about this? This is insane. 50.2 points per game. That's what was their average. And they allowed just over 16. So it's over 50 and under a little over 16 allowed. Beat Southern Cal 41-38 in arguably the best college football game ever played. I mean, that's debatable for some, I'm sure. But the Rose Bowl, many, many will remember that. Southern Cal was, I believe, going for a third consecutive national championship. I know Steven remembers this College Game Day going on and on. Is this the greatest team ever assembled in college football? Whoops. Forgot to win the damn biggest one they played. Texas won. This is insane. They won the Big 12 championship 70-3. Largest margin of victory in Big 12 championship history. Of course, had the great Vince Young, Michael Griffith, Michael Huff, Brian Robinson, Jamal Charles, David Thomas at tight end was a standout. Six players selected in the next draft after this season. But, man, Texas team's in my top five. What's your thoughts on them, Steven?
For sure. Definitely a top five SEC championship team since the BCS era started. And it started early in the season with a big win at Ohio State. I remember watching that game and thinking, yeah, this team ranked number two, it's more than living up to the hype. They're going to be a contender for that national championship. Of course, pounded Oklahoma. You mentioned the big victory over Colorado with the Big 12 championship game, 70-3. But the thing that I will always remember about this team, and it won't surprise anybody, is how epic that national championship game was and how much of a monster performance Vince Young had. I think it was over 400 total yards, I think three touchdowns. I mean, just carrying Texas to the national championship. I think if I close my eyes, I can hear Keith Jackson with the call, you know, Vince Young getting into the end zone, and then the celebration that ensued after they beat USC when they stopped them on defense with just a few seconds left. So, I mean, the talent on defense, the playmaking ability of Vince Young, this team really had it all.
Mm-hmm. And I looked it up, Steven, because I thought this was the case, but I wanted to verify. Colorado fired their coach, Gary Barnett, after that 70-3 Big 12 title game loss, and who could blame him? But they Well, until Dion, pretty much, but they never quite recovered from that, did they?
No, it's been a rough couple of 10 years there for Colorado. Those of us who remember like the Big 12 in Colorado in the 90s and 2000, or like early 2000s, I guess, like you remember them being a power. It's funny as we talk about this to see, and you look at the standings of college football and just see like some of the teams that have cycled through being a kind of a consistent winner and dropped off. A good exercise down memory lane, if you will.
Yeah, and shout out Cousin Jet. He says the comeback at Oklahoma State, closest game other than Southern Cal. And if my memory serves, I just remember watching that, Stephen. I think I was in my dorm room or something. And I just remember Vince Young was like, they couldn't tackle the guy. Like he would take off on all these runs, and it's just like, why don't you just tackle that big guy? You know what I mean? But, I didn't realize at the time. Well, easier said than done with arguably the greatest quarterback in Texas history, one of the best in college football history. Literally almost no one could tackle that guy.
I remember he had like an 80-yard touchdown run or something. There was like a pump fake and he outran the whole deep. I'm forgetting exactly the play, but you're right. That was one of Vince Young's probably most epic performances there at that season.
Yeah, he's just so big. It's like, he can't be that fast. Yeah. He got to the NFL. I know he didn't have a huge, lengthy career, but right off, I believe he was Rookie of the Year. He proved he had the talent to play among the elite of the elite. So we'll be talking more about them in a minute. How about Florida right after that, Steve? Man, we went on what a run here for championships for the SEC. We got Florida 2006, went 13-1. They did beat Ohio State. I love seeing Ohio State lose 41-14 in the championship. This team, a little unusual though, Steve, only scored 29.7 points per game. Not an offensive juggernaut by any means, but the defense was outstanding. They gave up 13.5 points per game. This was Urban Meyer's second season with Dan Mullen as the offensive coordinator. Greg Mattinson and Charlie Strong were co-defensive coordinators. They had Reggie Nelson, Ryan Smith, and Brandon Siler as the three All-Americans off his team. 9 players selected in the 2007 NFL draft, with the only loss being at Auburn, 27-17. And this was the, mixing in Chris Leak, Tebow. Never quite seen anything like that, how they were switching out the quarterbacks, and maybe never seen anything else quite like it.
This team, I think the first thing that jumps out to me is how it ended. And you think about that game against Ohio State, where I think Ohio State was favored. Ohio State scores on the Ted Ginn touchdown run or touchdown kickoff return. Mm-hmm. And it's like Ohio State's just going to take care of business. And then after that, it was all Florida. And of course, put the beat down on Ohio State in the national championship game. But also it's worth noting, Mike, I think that the end of the season set up well for Florida to get into that game, because I think USC lost to UCLA, and then there was the calls for a rematch of Ohio State Michigan. But Florida, thanks to USC losing and by beating Arkansas in the SEC championship, got up to that number 2 spot and then took care of Ohio State. So the Chris Leak Tebow combo will always be memorable. Percy Harvin starting to scratch the surface. Also, this is kind of like really inside the weeds here. Ryan Smith was actually, I think, one of the first graduate transfers in college football. He was at Utah and he went to Florida after that. So a lot of memorable moments on that team for me from Florida.
Yeah, I would never even thought of that one. But so 2 years into Urban Meyer's title or run there, winning a national championship. I know that certainly caught me off guard, but it was the start of what could have been a tremendously lengthy career there. But of course, we'll get into some of the others. But we all know that kind of went sideways on them. But this should have been a damn dynasty. You know what?
Yeah, especially with considering what happened 2 years later and having a special player like Tim Tebow on your roster. Yeah, they could have been like a mini Alabama run there in the 2006, 2007, 2008 run. I don't know, Mike, did you see this? That what was he talking about on last week about how if you were lying as a coach, you should be banned from college football. Or did you catch that?
Urban Meyer said that?
Yeah.
I guess he wants to ban himself from coaching football, I guess.
He's a Division I ban life if you're caught lying to the NCAA, I guess. So I guess he's thinking like maybe the Jim Harbaugh thing. So.
Yeah, he does not like that guy. You know what?
Yeah. I never, Ohio State, Michigan, never going to stand down at all on that rivalry.
I mean, who the hell, Harbaugh is not going to care, right? Because, I mean, he's in the NFL. Yeah. I don't think he's coming back to college ever unless he goes back to Michigan.
I think, yeah. I mean, I think at this point, anything that the NCAA does to Jim Harbaugh, he does not care one bit. It's probably gestures in the air and say, I won the national title. Screw you. I'm out of here.
Yep. Well, speaking of from being banished, how about Les Miles? He led LSU to 2007 national champion. This was the wacky, arguably the craziest year in college football, at least in my lifetime. Steven, there was South Florida rose to number two during this season. It was wild. LSU won it somehow with two losses. And this is, of course, before an expanded playoff that it was, would have seemed ludicrous ever. But hey, they managed to get it done. 6-2 in conference play, too. They averaged 38.6 points per game. They gave up 20 points per game. So again, really, you know, solid on offense, not elite by any means on defense, but they won every game. It didn't go into triple overtime, as Les Miles would say. Won the bowl game, beat Ohio State 38-24 in the BCS National Championship. Their two losses was at Kentucky, 43-37 in triple overtime, and they lost to Arkansas 50-48 in triple overtime. They had Glenn Dorsey, linebacker Ollie Highsmith, and DB Craig Stentz. Those were their three All-Americans, and they had seven players drafted in the 2008 NFL draft. So I don't know about you, Steven, but I don't mean to like tarnish LSU's championship or anything, but to me, 2007 is mostly about the wild and insane season. Credit LSU for coming out on top, but to me, it's almost like the whole season was more memorable than the team that actually ended up winning the trophy.
Yeah, it really is. I think anytime you mention 2007 among college football fans, the first thing you go to is how many times that number one, number two spot changed during the season, thinking about South Florida. Also, the West Virginia Pitt game at the end of the year. West Virginia was basically on the doorstep of playing for the national championship, lost to Pitt 13-9, a score and a date that will live among Pitt and West Virginia fans for a long time. I think the thing about this LSU team that also stood out to me was thinking back to that SEC title game and how Matt Flynn was injured and Ryan Perilou had to start. So how kind of like, I guess not to use a bad term, perilous, like their national championship game was, because like Les Miles said, they were undefeated in regulation. They lost the two games. They lost to Arkansas in the last week of the regular season before the SEC championship, beat Tennessee. And then of course the dominoes fell their way, but still a really talented team. I mean, like you mentioned, Highsmith, Glenn Dorsey. I loved watching Trendon Holiday in returns. He was so fun to watch. But 2007, known more for the craziness rather than LSU's championship.
Yeah, shout out Jesus Louise for pinpointing this. Even look, there was on the national champion, they played two games on pay-per-view. And this wasn't like Southeast Louisiana, which those were the games typically that were pay-per-view. This is Middle Tennessee. And this was Louisiana Tech. I mean, could you imagine today having to pay pay-per-view for, you know, games against FBS competition?
I cannot imagine that. But I got to say, I'm a little disappointed that when you didn't talk about Tennessee, you didn't mention our old friends at Jefferson Pilot Sports there.
There was a time, Steven, I was living in Los Angeles. I was at the Buffalo Wild Wings. You know, me and my buddies, we would all go to watch the games because we didn't have cable or anything. And I just remember asking them to put the Tennessee game on. And it was one of those like ULM Tennessee games. And it was like standard def. It wasn't pay-per-view because I don't think they would have paid for it. But it was the only, they had 50 televisions and one on standard def. And it was Tennessee. And people kept walking by getting mad that I wanted to watch the Tennessee game. Those were the rough days. You know what?
They were. And also, here's like really throwing it back. I don't know if you remember, but, you know, when ABC would have like regional coverage, you know, on Saturday, like the 3:30, 2:30 game would be a regional coverage game. So you'd have to like buy the USA Today paper or watch the ESPN Thursday night game to figure out like what game's going to be on in your area. So like the ads would be like, you know, Washington State plays UCLA at 2:30 in the West Coast and the, you know, this East and South. So it's funny to see how all of this has changed, because it like, you know, the pay-per-view thing, all the questionable pictures. It's nice to have all these games on like ESPN, ABC, ESPN Plus. Makes it a lot easier for us college football fans.
Yep. And then we got Big Ten putting games, marquee games on at noon. You crazy SOBs. All right. 2008. I mean, I'm telling you, it's just SEC after SEC after SEC. Florida won it again, Steven. 13-1. They went 7-1 in the conference, only lost Ole Miss. And this was after they lost 31-30. This was the Tim Tebow promise. You'll never see anyone try harder, compete harder, beat everyone's ass. Well, he didn't say ass. He doesn't curse. And like the Florida Gators, and he was right, Steven. They averaged 43.6 points per game. Now, the defense was dominant, allowed 12.9 points per game, won the BCS National Championship over Oklahoma 24-14. All Americans on this team. Tim Tebow, of course. Linebacker Brandon Spikes, running back Brandon James is a returner. Only three players, believe it or not, were selected in the 2009 NFL draft off this team, but they would have 30 that were on this team that would eventually go on to play in the NFL, including was Cam Newton, was he the backup this year?
Yes, he was. Also, John Brantley, former very highly touted quarterback that did not work out on the roster.
Right. The next, I remember he was the next Tebow, I was told.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was second string and Newton would have been third, I think.
Ooh.
So,
man, but this is what we were saying. This would have been a dynasty if after all these championships and then Cam Newton was the successor to Tim Tebow. I mean, we could talk about that all day, but what stands out to you about 2008? Florida, aside from, don't even look at that 30-6 whooping they gave Tennessee and Neyland Stadium.
Mike, I think the first thing that stands out is always the speech by Tebow, you know, and I'll tell you kind of why that always resonates with me. Back in 07, Florida was 9-4. The offseason from 07 to 08 was one of the most, I think, contentious debates that we had at Athlon Sports about the number one team. I was on the camp, we need to pick Florida number one. There were some others. I think I forget exactly who was all in that conversation, but there was a lot of concern about Florida because they only won 9 games. They gave up a lot of points on defense the year before. But I think this team sort of realized the potential that we all thought they had come into the year with Tebow, so many stars. The defense got a lot better. You know, you mentioned some of those guys, also the Marquise, Mike Pouncey, Joe Hayden, Carlos Dunlap. The list goes on and on. This is an insanely talented team that had that early speed bump, but overcame it by winning the national championship.
Yeah, and the ultimate weapon, people are asking, Percy Harvin. He was certainly a standout member of this team, but believe it or not, at least according to my research, I don't think he was named All-American, which is hard to believe, but he was arguably their best player.
Also, I think Riley Cooper and Lewis Murphy on that team and receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Have plenty of what Jeff Demps is as well in that team at running back. So yeah, they were
Hernandez, right?
I was that. Yeah. Yeah. Cornelius Ingram as well. Also Chris Rainey. They were loaded with like dynamic skill players on that team.
Yeah. I mean, this is the team, I think, for Florida. I think they're going to be top five as well. But then Steven, what I thought was going to be, well, let's see. Yeah. This was the series I thought we were going to get annually. Alabama 2009 come roaring in with Nick Saban. They won the national championship, went undefeated 14-0. They averaged 32.1 points per game, allowed only 11.7 points per game. Beat Texas, knocked out old Colt McCoy. It would have been a different story, they say, had Colt not got knocked out by Marcell Dareus, that crazy lineman. 37-21. Nick Saban's third year in Tuscaloosa. All Americans running back Mark Ingram, linebacker Rolando McClain, DB Javier Arenas, and defensive lineman Terrence Cody, who blocked the kick against Tennessee. No, I flipped over a table when that happened, Steven. Seven players selected in the 2010 NFL draft. This was one hell of a team. And, you know, that game against Florida, SEC championship, number one Florida, number two Alabama. This is when Nick Saban and company put the nation on notice, beat them 32-13. That was the standout for me in the SEC championship. Made Tim Tebow cry. That's where that famous photo comes from. But man, this is one of the best teams of all time, I feel like.
I agree with you. I think the two things that stood out to me is, if you go back to that 2008 season, it felt like the groundwork for this victory was laid in that SEC championship game, because I thought that they gave, if my memory serves me correct, they gave Florida maybe a little bit more of a battle than some people thought. I think some of the people that I talked to going into that game, they were like, Florida's like, Alabama's not going to have an answer for Tebow. I think they gave him a battle, but I think you can kind of see where this was going for Alabama. You could see the trajectory. You could see all the pieces that Saban and company were putting together on the recruiting trail. Then you get to this season where they get over the hump. They beat Florida, take care of business against Texas, kind of like at LSU. It's Nick Saban getting Alabama to the top. And I think that's kind of what I'll always take away about this team. Pretty dominant, and also the start of something here for Nick Saban.
Mm-hmm. And the end, wasn't this right after, I think, Urban Meyer had his heart issue and retired, and then he came back like a day later?
Yeah, and they had that 8-5 season right after that.
And then he went to go spend some time with his family. He was retiring
for 1 year, and he's back at Ohio State.
Oh, Urban. He's about as bad as old Hugh. All right. How about, and then, man, so Alabama wins it, right? You think, well, Auburn must be god awful. Nope. Auburn wins the national championship, Stephen. 2010 goes perfect. 14-0. They averaged 41.2 points per game. And they, I wrote down the what they surrendered wrong, but man, this was a wild, wild team. Speaking of team of destiny, Stephen, won the BCS National Championship over Oregon 22-19. Cam Newton won the Heisman. Nick Fairley was an All-American. And that's about all anybody remembers when it comes to marquee players on this team. This was Gene Chizik's second season. Four players drafted off this team in the 2011 NFL draft. And who could forget, personally, my favorite moment in SEC college football history, the kick six happened here. I also, you know, excuse me, that was a couple years later. But the one that stands out was when he took over, Cam Newton took over against LSU and just ran wild.
Yeah.
And that's when you're like, my God, this guy's a freak. The SEC championship, they completed a Hail Mary right before halftime to score. But I don't know why this is in my memory, Stephen, but I watched, again, I was living out in California at this time. I remember watching that Mississippi State game. That was the second game of the season. They won 17-14. And I was like, God, neither one of these teams is very good. You know what I mean? Like, I thought Auburn was in trouble. I heard all this cool stuff about Cam Newton, and then I was like, yeah, that guy can barely play. So, I mean, this, from the beginning to the end, one of the more improved teams in SEC history.
Yeah, it really was. Also, after that Mississippi State game, they had that big win over Clemson in overtime. And I think later in the season, there was the game against Alabama where they fell behind 24-0, had the epic comeback to win 28-27. So I think the takeaway for me in this team, and it's funny, is like you mentioned it with Nick Fairley and Cam Newton. Those two guys were so dominant. Michael Dyer was also on this team, great running back. But they got a lot better because preseason, I think they were 23rd in the preseason and, of course, ended up winning the national title. But they got a lot better during the season. But this was really just about Cam Newton carrying a team to the national championship. I mean, Nick Fairley was great on defense, but their defense wasn't, you know, I mean, compared to some of these other ones, were not great. But just Cam Newton was just so good. And then, of course, there was the epic game against Oregon in the national championship, 22-19. So this is really, this to me, the story about Cam Newton and carrying a team almost single-handedly to the championship.
Right. And if you care about, you know, the insanity of fandom too, This is when I believe they put after the Iron Bowl, the comeback, huge comeback by Cam Newton and Auburn in the second half. I believe they put the Auburn jersey on Bear Bryant's statue, and that's when that crazy bastard went and poisoned all the trees at Auburn and made Paul Feinbaum famous. So, you know, thanks the Iron Bowl for all the Paul Feinbaum being famous. You know what?
Also that year, Auburn had 7 wins by 1 score. That's pretty hard to do. You know, so, I mean, team of destiny, good fortune, you got to have it all. But, man, the Cam Newton factor here and all the craziness surrounding that during the season, what a season that was.
Right. And then, I mean, poor Alabama, right? They had just won a national championship. They may never recover. What are they going to do? Poor us. Oh, wait. National champion right off at 2011, went 12-1. Interestingly, did not win the SEC West because that was old LSU. Maybe one of the best teams ever to not win a national championship was LSU that year. Number one, number two, game of the century. LSU won it in Tuscaloosa 9-6. I believe Alabama's kicker missed 2 or 3. I can't remember exactly, but he missed several kicks in a would have been huge in a 3-point margin there. And of course, you know, all anyone remembers, though, they got the revenge 21-0 in the BCS National Championship in LSU's backyard, New Orleans. Man, what a travesty that was for LSU and Les Miles fans there. But this Alabama team averaged 34.8 points per game. But most impressively was this defense allowed just over 8 points per game, Stephen. My goodness. Man, this was an elite team. All-Americans, running back Trent Richardson, linebacker Dante Hightower, DB Mark Barron. They had 4 first-rounders drafted in just in the next draft and 8 players overall. But man, this season, all I think about is Alabama and LSU and just their battle. And really, you know, this is a big reason why we got an expanded playoff, because people couldn't handle SEC versus SEC in a national championship.
I was going to go with the game that upset a nation and led to the playoff. It is funny to look back at some of these years, and I was looking something up for this exercise and came across an article that's, you know, was a coach talking about how we needed a playoff, and it wasn't dealing with this year. It was actually dealing with a year prior to this one. So it was almost funny to see, like, in time how this evolved. And then, of course, 2011 got here, and the Alabama LSU rematch upset a lot of people, so they actually went through with it. But Mike, also 45 players, I think, from that Alabama LSU game that played in that year actually went on to play or were drafted in the NFL, signed somehow a roster. That is a ton of talent for one game to have. I know the first game wasn't necessarily pretty, but man, there was a lot of individual talent on that field. And so I think I look at 2011 as the season I will always remember for those two games. Weren't necessarily the prettiest games, especially the second one after Alabama held up to 92 total yards, but also it is an insane amount of talent, but also the sort of the change. You could see the changing of the guard to get the actual 14 playoff going. Kind of the seeds started right there.
Well, you talk about how bad the game was, Stephen. I don't think I'll ever forget this, but because anytime someone mentions that national championship, Alabama beating LSU 21-0. So I was working night shift, right? So I was unavailable to watch any big sporting events. So what I would do is obviously record them, right? And then I would go home. I'd get off around like midnight. I'd go home and watch the games, and I didn't mind it that bad. But when I did mind it, Steven, is when someone like my buddy Greg would come in and come into my office, and he'd be like, "Hey, how about Alabama? They beat the hell out of LSU." And I'm like, "Damn it, my night is ruined because I had this damn thing recorded and I had no idea." So that was my life. It was pretty shitty. That was before I got into all this stuff. That was a big reason why I started doing media, Steven, because I was tired of people ruining outcomes and games. I couldn't handle it.
I was tired of missing games. That's kind of why I got into sports writing. I was like, I don't want to be away when, like, the big SEC or big time college football game is on. So that's how we both got oddly started in the sports business here.
Right. So again, poor Alabama. I mean, oh my God, they had to suffer through Auburn winning one. Well, they just won another one, Steve. In 2012, Alabama went 13-1. They went 7-1 in the conference. Only loss of the entire season was to A&M, Johnny Manziel Magic. You know, Saban famously said he's Johnny Manziel. The only thing you can predict is his unpredictability. So they couldn't handle him, but they handled literally everybody else. They averaged 38.7 points per game and allowed just over, just under 11, so 10.9. Won the BCS National Championship, one of the biggest blowouts, Stephen, in championship history. Well, until TCU game coming up. 42-14. This is the beginning of Brian Kelly can't coach in a big game, and he's quite literally not proven it since, in my opinion. They had All-Americans linebacker C.J. Mosley, DB DeMarcus Miller. 9 players off his team were drafted in the 2013 NFL draft. What stands out to you here, Stephen, about the 2012 Alabama National Champions?
I'll always remember that Johnny Manziel game with Alabama, just for how crazy good Johnny Manziel was in that performance, and how good he had to be to overcome Alabama. Also, I remember thinking back in the preseason, and Mike, I don't know if you remember this, USC was voted number one. Ooh. Lane Kiffin.
Yeah. What happened, Steven?
7-6 happened, which led to his going on the tarmac the year later. But how dominant Alabama was for most of the season, and until they, of course, they ran to Johnny Manziel. But also that SEC championship game, 32-28, I think that was a pretty epic ending as well, for Alabama to beat Georgia. So just another kind of another one of Nick Saban's standout teams there, and capped off by that dominant blowout victory over Notre Dame.
Yeah. What do you think's worse? And again, Georgia, we'll get to them in a minute. So they did finally get theirs. But what do you think's worse for Georgia fans, Stephen? Losing that SEC championship, for anybody that doesn't remember, I mean, it was chaotic. There was it was like a back and forth contest. Georgia was driving. And I believe it must have been Aaron Murray. He had a pass tipped, and it was a receiver or running back ended up catching it. Should have just let it fall to the ground to stop the clock, but they just simply ran out of time. Had they had the time, they probably would have won that game. But what do you think is more excruciating, Stephen, losing that game or knowing that they probably would have killed Notre Dame too and won that master championship? What do you think is, because Notre Dame just looked completely outclassed. Now that's full credit to Alabama, but certainly I think we believe Georgia may have not won 42-14, but I find it very, very, very difficult to believe that Notre Dame could have beaten that Georgia team.
Man, and that had been a perfect year to have like a 4-team playoff back in 2012 and get a Georgia-Alabama rematch would have been pretty special. I thought, Mike, I don't know if you saw this, but I've seen a couple of Notre Dame kind of sides of things on that 2012 national championship game. And it was, they saw Alabama coming out of the tunnel and thought, uh-oh, like we're in trouble because these guys are just bigger. They're like faster than all of us. So Alabama probably won the let's get off the bus battle and beat you into the stadium and get out for warmups. But man, that game was, I can remember Brian Kelly, like before halftime, I think he looked like he was out of answers. And basically I think he said something that like if Alabama is just not going to show up for the second half or something. So it was clearly, it was over then.
And then 2015, Stephen, Alabama. I mean, this was Alabama here. But 14-1, they lost to Ole Miss. This was a losing to Hugh Freeze there in at home, which was pretty wild. I believe this would have been the Chad Kelly Ole Miss team, but they never lost again. Oh, yeah. Now that I remember, this was the one where Alabama had all these turnovers and they come roaring back, you know, one less turnover. They probably would have won it, but coulda, shoulda, woulda. And then they made the change at quarterback, never looked back. That Florida, Georgia dominant win 38-10 at Georgia. I believe that was the funeral game where Georgia wore black and they said, hey, we're going to do something unique. And then Alabama came out, whooped their ass and said, yeah, they're dressed for their funeral. That was classic. Tennessee, it's about the best Tennessee performance they ever had against Alabama, Nick Saban, but until the one they actually beat him. But this was a beginning, right, of back-to-back-to-back-to-back Clemson battles. That's kind of what stood out to me about this Alabama team. What about you?
Yeah, the two games that I always remember is the one you mentioned against Ole Miss, the Crazy turnovers. I think there was a few insane plays in there by Chad Kelly and Ole Miss to pull off the upset, but a lot of Alabama mistakes played into that. But then Alabama got going the rest of the way, and they didn't have those slip-ups. They had the close call against Tennessee. Of course, they took care of business against Florida. They beat Michigan State 38-0 in the first round of the playoff. But that game against Clemson, I will always remember that onside kick that Nick Saban did to steal a possession, I think, after it was tied up, because they really didn't have an answer to stop Deshaun Watson and that Clemson offense. So they stole that possession, and then O.J. Howard, I think, had a big play right off of that. So the two kind of crazy games stand out, but also a lot of stars on this team. And also on the coaching staff, I think this was the staff that had Lane Kiffin, Bo Davis, Kirby Smart, Mario Cristobal, Billy Napier, Mel Tucker. I mean, staff was loaded along with the players.
Yeah, a couple good ones, huh, Steven? So, yeah. Alabama dominant again, just like they were 2017, went 13-1. Only loss was at Auburn, and this was a red-hot Auburn team that went on to go to the SEC championship. Alabama got another shot, though, and buddy, this was the second and 26 Tua game that was fantastic. They had to beat Clemson with the this was with Jalen Hurts. You know, this is just the wildest thing. I mean, how could that not be the standout? Where you got Jalen Hurts, he's awesome. But you know, everybody wanted to see the new guy Tua, and they make the change at halftime. They were losing. I think it was 13-0 at halftime. They win in overtime. But what an epic season this was, and another one of Saban's masterful coaching jobs.
Yeah, and I think the end of the season will always stand out to me, because after that loss against Auburn, there was a lot of kind of like, I remember going into the playoff thinking, okay, can Alabama beat Clemson? I mean, Clemson was the number one team. There was a lot of uncertainty about how that would play out. Defense, of course, for Alabama was great, but could they find a spark kind of on offense in the playoff against some good defenses? Sure enough, took care of business against Clemson, suffocated them. And then, of course, the epic ending against Georgia. Also, we'll remember this team for some of the skill talent too. Calvin Ridley, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Josh Jacobs, Devonta Smith. This team was loaded with guys we remember even later on going to star at Alabama.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because this was kind of when, I know it was after Kiffin, but this was like when you were getting the effects of Kiffin, right?
Yeah.
Where with the spread offense, with all the receivers, with the quarterbacks, because for years and years, Nick Saban was just defense, run the ball, control the clock. And now after some years of having a ton of success with some other guys, you know, they were spreading it out, and it really paved the way for a new look Alabama. And again, I mean, we could literally go on for hours and hours and hours about how awesome Nick Saban is. We all know. I mean, anybody that's not an idiot says he's the greatest of all time. And a big part of that is his willingness to adapt when so many of these coaches fail to do it. You know what?
Yeah, the hire of Lane Kiffin, I remember how bold it was perceived. But I also remember thinking that, you know, Alabama was trying to modernize. I mean, they would had the kind of like man ball, you know, beat you like a caveman with a run game and defense and sort of modernize to the spread offense. And then, of course, it worked out with Kiffin and then Sarkisian. And so, I mean, Nick Saban, one of his greatest assets, like you said, is the ability to adapt, hiring the right coaches, knowing recruiting well, developing it, but also doing the same thing with coaches.
Mm-hmm. All right. So then next we will have, oh man. 1 second. It's not loaded up here. LSU, strong contender, Steven, for one of the best teams ever. 2019, 15-0. Man, they ran through everybody. They averaged over 48 points per game. Now the defense, you know, you could certainly quibble with that. They were not elite by any means, but they certainly, I think, got better at the tail end of the season. They went into Alabama, beat them 46-41. That was a huge game. Georgia just completely dominated them in the SEC championship, 37-10. And then, Oklahoma, they still haven't recovered. I mean, they're getting close on defense, but I don't think they've recovered from that. I mean, I think LSU had almost 50 at halftime, if I recall. 63-28. And then Clemson was a hell of a team that year. And LSU beat them 42-25. But this was the first ever that I can recall, Stephen, where it was, you know, just this dominant team that just killed everybody pretty much. I mean, Auburn almost beat them. But that, other than that, I mean, this team was just loaded with the elite talent. And I don't know given with the portal and NIL, I don't know if there's ever going to be a team with this much star power ever again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think there's a couple things about this team that stands out to me, but it's funny to go back a season to the 2018 team because the groundwork was laid for this team then. And I don't anybody remembers this in the Fiesta Bowl where UCF, they clobbered Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
And it was like, is he not going to come back in the game? Is he hurt? And it felt like that was like the awakening of Joe Burrow because the next season he had the 60 touchdowns. So I always think about his arrival at LSU from Ohio State. He was a big get. The first season was kind of a transition year. Then you go into year two, that win at Texas early in the season, epic game. Then you go later, that 46-41 game against Alabama, one of the craziest, one of the best regular season games that I can remember probably in the last 10 years of the SEC. But also just how dominant and talented this team could be. I mean, you put Joe Burrow with Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase together. I mean, it's easy to see how this offense was easily one of the most record setting in college football history.
Yeah. I mean, even at running back, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because Shay called him the Clydesdale on this show. had Moss, Randy Moss, the son at tight end. I mean, but my goodness, they were just when those guys are afterthoughts, that's when you know you had one heck of a team. And then this is like a bizarro team. I never give this team their due, but it was just such a wild year, Stephen. 2020 Alabama with the COVID and nothing but conference games. Now, they were dominant. We got to give them their due because basically no one, Missouri gave them a game. That and Florida in the SEC championship, 52-46. But, you know, this was just such a bizarre year. But Devonta Smith winning the Heisman. We had Matt Jones tearing it up out of nowhere. Alabama 2020, you know, unfair to them. But we're going to remember this as a wild, wild season. That's kind of my standout. But just the dominating factor in which they took care of business.
Yeah, that's what will always stand out to me is just, first of all, it was a weird season. But also, I think in a weird season where you played only SEC games, Alabama took advantage of it. Pretty dominant for the most part. Like you said, Missouri early in the season, 38-19. And they played the Florida game 52-46. But the one game that always stands out to me in that year was the Ole Miss game early in the season. That was Lane Kiffin versus Nick Saban. Then Ole Miss had him on the ropes for quite a bit in there. I'll always think about that one. Seven times they scored 50 or more points. Pretty dominant on both sides of the ball. Not a full season, but I think this is a pretty strong contender for one of those top five spots.
And I do recall, Stephen, that after that Ole Miss game, Saban come out here and said, oh, they got our signals. Killing our signals. Even though Lane Kiffin, up-tempo, I mean, they snap it so quick. Yeah. I mean, who the hell? There's no time to read signals, but that was the excuse for nearly losing to Ole Miss. But beyond that, they crushed everybody. You know what?
Beat Georgia that 41-24. That was a good showdown in Tuscaloosa after that Ole Miss game.
Mm-hmm. And then we had the very next year, Stephen, 2021 Georgia, first national champion over 40 years for them dogs, Stephen. And man, they did it. They still lost to Alabama, but no one remembers that because they beat Alabama, the national championship, the one that really mattered. But you got to go back. They weren't even favored, I don't believe, in the opener against Clemson on a neutral field. Beat them 10-3. There was not an offensive touchdown scored in that game. The only touchdown, as I recall, was a pick six. But man, what a defense here! This was Kirby Smart, arguably his best defense in Athens, and that's saying something because damn near every one of them is elite. Well, yeah, pretty much they are all elite. But man, they just tore through it. Aside from that SEC championship where Bryce Young had himself a day and the receivers were killing Georgia. Beyond that, I mean, they were just absolutely dominant.
Yeah, it's funny to think about this season now because it started with that game over Clemson. And that was, it's not quite Texas, Ohio State this year, but I mean, number three versus number five playing in Charlotte was a pretty epic way to start the season. And then for how ugly it was, I think made some people question, like, how good are these two teams? The thing that I will always remember, though, Mike, JT Daniels versus Stetson Bennett. It was talked about every, you know, freaking time, you know, after Georgia lost to Alabama as a time to change quarterbacks and all this. Stetson Bennett was the guy and led him, of course, to that big win over Michigan in the Orange Bowl. And then, of course, the win over Alabama. So kind of like Georgia, just getting back to the top of college football will be something that I always remember. And the two games against Alabama, two pretty enjoyable games to watch.
And then no chance they do it again, right, Steve? No way. It took them 40 some odd years. Oh, yeah, they did it the next year, too. This time they went undefeated, tore through everybody again. And I knew we were all in trouble, Steve, in week one. They beat number 11 Oregon 49-3. This was supposed to be a good Oregon team. Well, they were pretty good, but it's just Georgia was on another level here. Man, they just ran through everybody. Tennessee could have beat them, but it was raining. People forget that it was raining. Otherwise, Tennessee probably would have beat them. That Ohio State game went down to the wire. Ryan Day, in his infinite wisdom, when he tried to kick like a 56-yarder with a kicker that has 40-yard range. That was genius. And then, you know, the most lopsided, I think, national championship game ever, 65-7 over TCU. This team, I feel like, may not even get their due because, I mean, it was like a scrimmage in the national championship. It was crazy that we allowed TCU, shout out Jim Harbaugh, laying a damn egg. And otherwise, it would have been a legitimate team, perhaps, there. But, yeah, I mean, they kicked everybody's ass, and they were the elite of the elite. And, you know, my only question is which team was better, 21 or 22?
I think real ones know the national championship game that year was the Ohio State-Georgia game. TCU didn't stand much of a chance against Georgia that year. But I think the thing that I always take away from, you know, trying to parse through like Georgia 2022, 2021, you know, they had a close call against Missouri early in the season. You know, for the most part, not really threatened until they got to that game against Ohio State. So pretty much took care of business. It felt like this year's offense in 2022, I think, was a little bit more prolific than the 21 version, but the 21 version had a better defense. The 2022 defense was clearly slacky, giving up 14 points as opposed to the 10 from the one in 2021. But man, back-to-back epic blowout in the national championship. That's a pretty darn good season for Kirby Smart and company.
All right, Steven. So we've went through all the SEC champions from the BCS and playoff era. It took us over an hour to cover all that. But who's your top five teams that won the national championship from the SEC during that time?
So I kind of did a little bit of mixed bag here because I wanted to kind of get a few from each little era almost. It is a little hard sometimes, I think, to compare just different eras of college football. Maybe a little bit of recency bias on my part, so I'll start at the top. I've got 2019 LSU at number one. The most points scored in FBS history was 726. Joe Burrow and company. I think I had to go with them at number one, but it was a close call between number two, and that's 2020 Alabama. I know partial season, prolific offense, standout defense, and it's Alabama. It's hard to parse through some of these teams on which one is better. I went with 2020 Alabama at two, 2022 Georgia at three. Hard to call 2021, 2022 Georgia, but I went with 2022 Bulldogs there. And then at four, I'm going 2005 Texas. And then at number five, I'm going to go 08 Florida. I want to get the Vince Young, Tim Tebow teams in there. You could put several different versions, I think, of Alabama, maybe even 2021 Georgia in there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a heck of a list, Steven. Very similar to mine. I went LSU number one in 2019 as well. Yeah, the defense was of all these great teams, maybe, you know, worse is a wrong because, heck, they went undefeated and kicked everybody's ass. But, you know, the defense was nothing special, but that just should just highlight just how special that offense was. And heck, the defense had several guys that went on to play the NFL, so it's not like they were garbage by any means. LSU number one for me. I went Georgia. You said 22, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to go 21 just to be different than you, Steven. I got Georgia 2021. I got them right there. I got Alabama 2009. I got them number three. I got Florida 2008 as number four. And Texas 2005. I got them number five. But really, there is no wrong answers here. But I would certainly love a reality where we could watch these teams in their prime go head to head against one another. You know what a treat that would be.
Give us the historical simulations on NCAA football for this year, and we could always play it out. But I mean, Mike, you kind of said it there. There's several teams that could make this list. I mean, I put together five, and I'm thinking, geez, I could keep going on how epic these national championship teams are. You mentioned 09 Alabama. I think 2015 Alabama probably also gets overlooked because of that Ole Miss loss. But also, if you look how crazy it was, you know, it's easy to understand if you lose when you have five turnovers in there. So so many good teams didn't make the top five, but you could make the case for them. And where does 2023 Michigan, 2024 Ohio State rank on Mike's list here?
I don't even recognize those, because we all know they were cheating. They were, you know, Michigan for sure has admitted many times of cheating. Ohio State just bought their championship, so I don't really recognize. And then, heck, they lost, what was it, two games in regulation? So you can't be elite at losing multiple games in a regular season. You know what?
Got to go undefeated like 2019 LSU or 2020 Alabama, right?
I think so. I think I don't even think Ohio State would have made the college football playoff if they played an SEC schedule. I'll just tell you that, Steven.
Mike, they were pretty fortunate there was a 12-team playoff last year, because if not, they're sitting at home because that lost to Michigan. So it's funny, because I think the prevailing thought going into last year was like, oh, Penn State's going to benefit the most. I mean, and they did. But Ohio State, and we may see this, and this is something that I think we'll have to watch, is what college football teams that are like really talented lose two times or three times and get pushed down the seeding order, but make a playoff run. I think that's going to happen, and I think it'll happen to an SEC team. Ohio State just happens to be the beneficiary of it first.
Mm. All right, Steven. So, hey, really great conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Before we, you know, wrap it up here, can you give us a latest update on the Athlon Sports College Football Preview magazine and when people will be able to purchase it?
Absolutely. I don't know if you heard a like explosion, like not this Friday, but the one before. That was like me exploding after the magazine went to the printer. So it is at the printer. I am keeping an eye out for when it hits our online store. It could literally be any day now, but the on sale date is May 23rd. So it'll be hitting newsstands right around then. We'll have pre-orders available on our site soon. I say this not as a company shill. We did sell out of a lot of SEC covers last year. So if you want one, I would suggest ordering soon. So that is coming up very fast.
I can't wait for that, Steven. And as soon as we have that link, we'll put it in the show notes so that people can find it, so they can get their hands on the Athlon Sports College Football Preview magazine. It's college football season doesn't really start till you get that magazine in your hands. You know what?
Absolutely. Memorial Day and then the Athlon Sports College Football magazine always kind of signals to me that we're not that far away. We've almost made it, Mike. then we get the college football game and media days. It's not that far away, my friend.
It's right around the corner, and we're gonna be here to cover it all. Cousin Shane, he'll be back on the next episode. But until then, we appreciate each and every one of you for hanging out. We'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.